Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 227. I am Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Dr. Jonathan Fass, fresh back from his world trip. John, how you doing?
Hey, yo.
You're John. You're the reason why we haven't had a podcast in 4 weeks.
You liar.
Yeah, I know. Well, we are back either way, and we got a great show lined up for you. We have a bunch of cool topics to talk about. We're going to be getting to all that in just a minute. But I'm going to pull up the outline so I know what we're talking about. So, like I said, we've been kind of MIA again for a couple weeks. Things have been really busy. I just finished up Functional Strength Coach 4.0 for Mike Boyle. So that was what was kind of taking up most of my free time. And it's done. You're going to be able to order it pretty soon. And it's pretty awesome. Cool. If you're in the industry.
Congratulations.
Yeah, if you're in the industry, I heavily recommend checking it out because it's pretty much everything that we do at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning, sandwiched into a 12-hour talk, 6 hours of lecture and 6 hours of hands-on. So it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff. So hopefully you'll be checking that out soon. I don't know. I know you can order it through Perform Better right now, but the discs are being pressed like this week. So hopefully in like a week or two, it will actually be available to everyone. But I also want to quickly mention that we're going to record a show today, not super long. We do have about a 30-minute off topic where we talk about John's travels. And yep. Also, I'm heading to Tokyo in 3 days. So we talk a little bit about that, and I will be doing tons of updates about my trip to Tokyo. I'm hoping to check out at least one gym while I'm there. But as of right now, I'm not making any firm plans. I got my TRX in tow, and I will bring that. And there's also like a pretty badass gym at the hotel, which I'm sure no one ever uses.
Oh, cool.
So I can, get in my pec deck. My leg presses, and my Smith machine curls, my Smith machine single arm bench, and my Smith machine calf raises. Single leg though, I only do single leg. It's the whole unilateral training thing.
Right.
So I do single leg calf raises. Right. It's more functional.
That makes sense.
So that's all coming up. But let's. Let's kind of get right into it. Lee is probably going to be joining us shortly. She got stuck in traffic, so we'll
keep our fingers crossed.
We'll keep our fingers crossed, but like I said, we will see. Let's get right into it. Quick note that we're going to be doing an extra segment at the end of the mailbag, so stick around. We're going to be talking about the meeting of the minds. We had a question or a topic suggestion from Dave Morgan, who straight up, and you know what, this question probably doesn't get brought up enough considering how much it's talked about in, the podcast episodes, or if like you watch videos online about mobility and rehab, or if you go to a seminar, and that's about impingement and like what an impingement is, And like I talked to John off the air, like let's talk kind of about the most common impingements that we see and, how to work around it and to correct the problem at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, impingement is a little bit of a junk term because it doesn't actually say what's being impinged. So first we have to define what impingement is. And an impingement really means that something is being pinched off. It's being there's pressure, and that'll typically cause either some type of irritation or inflammation of a tendon. It could cause a tearing or damage to a muscle. Or in some cases, it can actually be an inflammation of bursa, which is like a soft disc that's designed to reduce friction. But that in and of itself can actually be inflamed if there's too much friction and too much movement occurring underneath it or around it. But basically, you find bursa all throughout the body. And some of these can also cause impingement because when they're inflamed, they can put pressure on the things that they're supposed to be helping in movement. So because of that, because there are so many different ways that an impingement can happen, that pressure can happen on a certain structure, and so many different structures that can be impinged, it's sometimes a little bit of a junk, catch-all. What we look for is there are certain tests, obviously, that we'll group together and see if these things come up positive. And if they do, we can be more assured that there's an impingement of some type of structure going on. In the shoulder, usually that means that it's one or more of the rotator cuff muscles. It could be the biceps tendon. Those are very common, typical impingements. We're starting to see impingements in the hip as well, and we're starting to understand that a little bit more, these anterior impingements of the hip. Causes, like I said, can be bursa and inflammation of that bursa. So it's putting pressure on a structure, a muscle or the tendon, really, when you're dealing with bursa. You can have what's called a subacromial impingement, which is the space that the rotator cuff basically sits through in the shoulder. And if that space is decreased, either we think maybe because of faulty mechanics, or it could also be because of the type of acromion process, which is a part of the bone. There are different ways that that bone can be formed, and certain formations of that bone kind of make it more like a hook rather than a flat surface. So that hook can rub and irritate one of those, biceps tendon or rotator cuff as well. So a lot of different ways that you can have an impingement, and a lot of different structures that you can impinge as well.
A little bit more about some of the more common ones that we see, and some of, like you said, it's kind of a junk term, but when we hear it talked about in articles or videos or again presentations and lectures and stuff like that, some of the more common ones that we hear about are, especially shoulder impingement, which, to be honest, I've seen in a wide range. It's really not one sport specific or one population. We're seeing it kind of across the board. Obviously, you're going to see it a little bit more in people that do a lot of overhead stuff.
Right.
So I don't know if you want to go a little bit more in depth on that, and kind of like how you go about treating, shoulder impingements. Obviously, mm-hmm. Not all cases are the same, though.
Right. Yeah, not all cases are the same. Generally speaking, if we're talking about the shoulders, we do look at the mechanics of it. The idea now, back in the day, like the shoulder treatment was all about the rotator cuff, and you would do these isolated rotator cuff exercises and basically try to strengthen the muscles that we felt, maybe were being impinged or were causing this pain. That can still be part of the process, but the more, progressive way to deal with it, I think, is going to be from that isolated rotator cuff strengthening kind of approach to looking at the scapula itself, the entire shoulder assembly, seeing how it's sitting and seeing what may or may not be working right that's causing some of these the problems and things getting pinched off or pressured. And that's kind of what we think is happening now with impingement syndrome. In the past, maybe it was the type of thing where you'd say, well, we're going to go in and cut you open and shave down the acromion process or do something like that, or repair the muscle. And what we're finding is it's kind of like patching a hole on a tire, but the problem is that the alignment is off, so you keep getting holes in your tire because the actual tread is wearing too thin on one side. So you can think of it maybe in those terms. So what you'll probably do is you're going to try to assess what is actually being impinged. Again, is it a biceps tendon, rotator cuff? What muscle in the rotator cuff? You can have a subscapular impingement. You can have a supraspinatus impingement. You can have any of them becoming impinged or bothered. And then you're going to take a look. So you're going to look at that muscle and begin the strengthening process of that muscle. Soft tissue can be involved. Inflammation control, if that's present, things like that. And then you're going to ultimately take a look at the shoulder itself, the thoracic mobility, everything that surrounds the shoulder and could be contributing to a poor position or poor movement or both. So I could have a scenario where my range of motion is compromised, and because of that, I may be making some additional motion that's unwanted. So my stability is poor, and that's based also on a lack of mobility. Or I could have it the other way around, where there's too much mobility, and therefore muscles are kind of getting pulled out of the way, so to speak. There, you've got too much going on. Muscles aren't capable of controlling the unwanted movement, and so you're having pressures and things clamping down on muscles that really shouldn't be taking place. So either or, it's either because there's not enough motion or too much, and then that can be drawn back to either there's not enough stability or there's too little stability. So you've kind of got two things that are working hand in hand that way. And basically what you try to do is you try to realign and reproduce quality mechanics and quality positioning. A lot of times that might involve lengthening certain structures that have become shortened, pecs, pec minor, coracobrachialis and things like that, lats as well, that may become a little bit too stiff and tight because of a lack of movement or a way that we're moving during the day, sitting at a desk job, that sort of thing. And then, so we'll try to lengthen that and try to improve the tissue quality of those structures if they're involved. And then the other side of things is the strength and stability of the stabilizing muscles. So the stuff that surrounds the scapula, the mid and lower.
You're reading this from a book?
No.
Okay.
This is what I do, dude.
No, John's just said, if you guys want to convert this to text, you can just save this and hand it into your teacher.
I guess. And then the other side of things would be the stuff that stabilizes. So mid and lower traps, serratus anterior can be a stabilizer or a mover, but typically we look at it as stabilizing. The rhomboids possibly, things like this. So structures that tend to be a little bit, possibly lengthened or are being underutilized in daily movement. The other thing, as far as specifically with overhead, when we move our arm overhead, that does decrease the space, the subacromial space, which is where a lot of the impingement we think takes place. So if you've got some problems with that spacing to begin with, going overhead can be a problem. At the same time, if you have poor stabilization of the scapula, it's going to become even more of a problem because you need to have that scapula locked down in order to have a safe overhead motion. So with something like that, if I'm dealing with an overhead athlete, I want to go from stability to motion. So something like, you can think of like a waiter carry, that really just locks down your scapula. In fact, if you look at things like Olympic weightlifters, you don't find too much shoulder problems relative to what you might expect, or maybe other overhead athletes. And I think the reason why that is if you look at the motions where you're dealing with snatches and where their arms are overhead and they're catching weight, or the jerk where they're, again, kind of catching weight, if you really break down the way that they move, they're not creating much motion overhead in terms of a press. They're actually catching it, which means that in order to do that properly, their scapula and their scapular stability is incredible. So that kind of concept of rather than creating motion at the shoulder blade, but rather decreasing motion or stopping motion is that first step to having good shoulder health. And when I think of a core, I include the shoulders, because I think that that's part of your core training. I think that you need to have good scapular stability as well as good core stability and good, hip strength in order to have a fully healthy trunk and body. Mm-hmm. So that's that first step of training an overhead athlete. They need the stability before they can create motion at that joint.
This would be a good blog post, John. I'm kind of going on here.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm gonna try to bring the horses in a little bit.
Go for it.
And again, kind of talk about the main ones that I think that at least I see most often are like I said, ankle, hip, and shoulder. Just make sure when you are trying to do any kind of mobilization or any kind of rehab, don't move in any kind of plane where you're feeling sharp pain. Like you've seen people in the past where if they have ankle mobility issues and they're trying to mobilize their ankle, where there's an impingement and they're basically just trying to mobilize on dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a big fan of the build strength on dysfunction, but if you are if you're trying to mobilize over a part where there is sharp pain, especially at the ankle or at the hip or at the shoulder, I mean anywhere, you're going to be running into more problems. And again, you're kind of like running into that bone on bone kind of thing where you're going to be doing more harm than good. Right. So just make sure if you are having any kind of impingement issues or you think you are, go see somebody. Make sure right. you're not going at it alone. Go see a physical therapist. Make sure you're getting it looked at so you can get a confirmation and then a diagnosis and treatment. Because it can lead into a much worse issue, and it can last for a very long time. So don't mess around with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good point too, because people will try to power through things, especially with their shoulders.
Yeah.
I find they just, you can't stop bench pressing. You can't.
Especially if the mobility drill that you're doing that you like saw on YouTube and you're feeling sharp pain while you're doing it, stop doing it. Like common sense, like just don't do
it. Yeah. It's, it is a tricky thing because they're, the joint by joint approach, I think, is a good way to look at things, but mm-hmm. obviously there's a little bit more involved than just a joint by joint approach, but it's a great framework, but when you get to the issues of actual pain and dysfunction and problems at a specific joint, it's not always just as simple as that. It's a good way, I think, to look at your training and the types of things you're trying to accomplish. But the shoulder especially, you need stability, but you also need mobility. And so I think that, just like you said, you don't try to put strength on top of a faulty foundation. You need to have that stability before you can then add strength. And the problem that you'll see a lot in terms of muscular pain, like an impingement syndrome, or any type of soft tissue problem, is that you're typically going to see muscles that should be stabilizers that are acting like prime movers, or prime movers that are trying to stabilize. So you're seeing muscles that really have a better role doing something else, but they're being recruited to do different things because there's a problem elsewhere. So for instance, I may have a compensatory strategy when I raise my shoulder up to use my upper trap, and that may not be the best way to do it. I should be able to move my shoulder freely before the upper trap engages. But if there's pain, then what I'll do is this kind of shrugging motion. So eventually I may have a problem with the upper trap. I may have neck pain. I may have cervical pain, but it started at the shoulder. So you see problems where muscles are starting to do different things or act too quickly in a motion or under work because of a problem elsewhere. So it's important to understand what the mechanics are at a specific time and to be able to train those mechanics and to train them properly. And that, like you said, tends to be more of a rehab specialist type of thing. So if there is a pain involved, your best bet is to really get that fixed rather than just trying to run through it, because it's never going to get better just by throwing more weight at it. It's never going to get better that way.
Well, I think that should cover that question.
Yeah, I guess so.
Over-delivered.
That's what we try to do here on the FitCast.
I think they got more than free out of that.
Yeah. Want me to read the next one?
John, how long have we been doing this? How long have we been doing this podcast? What do you think?
Tonight? I'd say we're doing this for like
227 episodes. You've been on it for like 100 and maybe 30 of them?
No.
More than that? Maybe more than that.
Really?
Dude, since this is the third generation of the show, I think so.
Wow.
There's a new generation coming that I'm working on in the background, by the way.
Oh yeah,
no, I'm dead serious. Like me and some of the coaches at Boyles are going to be putting some stuff together. So,
oh sweet, yeah. So I'm getting fired.
Yeah,
that's cool. Look, you just paid for a new banner, so whatever.
Yeah, right. It's like right after I paid for that logo, we had no podcast come out.
I know. It's
a couple hundred dollars. But by the way, Norm has some great stuff up on his website. Make sure to check out his website.
Oh, cool.
Yep, it's your friend. Yeah, get the next question. I look so great in my passport picture. The guy at CVS took a great job. Did a great job taking that picture. Yeah.
It's very important. This comes from Clem. He's running from Ireland, and he wanted everyone to know that no one says top of the morning there anymore. He loves the FitCast and wonders if he could help. We could help him out with a topic. He trains adult teams in a Gaelic field game called hurling, which is kind of like a cross between lacrosse and hockey. When team members are doing strength work pre and during season, I find it's very important to train for movement of the sport rather than training the muscle. What tips can you and the gang give me regarding how best to look at the movement involved in the sport and apply a training program that complements the physics of the movements? I would hugely appreciate any feedback you can give on the topic. Keep up the good work. Kev, what do you think? Coming from Boyles
is the house of functional training, as everyone seems to think. That's the rumor. But I think it's a really good question. It's something that it's one of those discussions that people have kind of gone back and forth and it doesn't necessarily persist just to sports. This is an important discussion for people who are just strength training in general. Let's break it down a little bit. He says, I find it's very important to train for movement of the sport rather than training the muscle. So he's talking about not doing any like direct muscle work, like not doing your leg extensions, not doing your leg curls, bicep curls, and all that stuff, but training for the sport. But when we talk about training for the sport, that's, again, it's another huge broad it's a broad subject where we're focusing on a lot of different aspects of preparation for the game. And when it comes to breaking it down, you're right, Clem. Like you want to train the movement, but you're not gonna necessarily it's kind of a parallel, but in baseball, like some jackass trainers out there, they attach a like I actually saw this when I was training at Gold's Gym in Venice, that one of the guys came in with a baseball bat with like a J hook, not a J hook, but like an I hook in, like a circle with a hook in it screwed into a baseball bat. Attached that to a cable station, then started swinging the bat under load. Trying to, specifically, I mean, you could say that's training the movement. I'm training the movement by loading up a baseball swing and swinging the bat. If that's where you're kind of going towards, which I don't think it is, Clem, that's absolutely wrong. Like you don't want to load up a activity. Like you don't want to load up a movement that you would do on the field directly. Like it's not a one-to-one kind of thing. But what we will do is, we will use med ball work to simulate hip internal and external rotation. Like if you talk about swinging a bat or swinging a club or, hitting a hockey puck, like all those things where you're doing like that hip toss motion where you're internally rotating your femur at the pelvis on that outside leg, then externally rotating an internal leg, like you're keeping your shoulders in line with your hips and you're throwing the ball. Like that's something where we can look at as a, movement of the sport. Like that's a movement that we would see in sport, and that's really the only time where we train, where I would say that you do train like a movement in a movement that you would see on the field, like or on the baseball field or under load. And we're even when the ballistic stuff, the reason why the ballistic stuff is so great is because we don't have to use a ton of load, but we can get a ton of speed, we can get a lot of power out of it, and not get a lot of the eccentric component, which is, what people, get sore from, is mostly the eccentric component. And that's usually when we're under the most load. So The thing I would say is when you're looking at training out of season, like obviously that's the time where you're going to make sure you get in the most work. You're going to make sure that you cover all your bases and prepare them for the season. When they're in season, you're just you're keeping them together. You're trying to maintain what you got in the off season during the season. And, you know, maybe they get a little bit stronger, but really you're just trying to make sure they don't lose weight, you know, they don't lose muscle mass, and they continue to maintain the speed and the power that they developed during their off season. So when you look at developing that program, make sure that you're just trying to focus on the basics. You don't need to necessarily look at it as, you know, am I preparing them to get on the field? If you're saying it's something like lacrosse or hockey, you know that they're getting, you know, a lot of time, a lot of cardio time, like a lot of time running around and doing stuff like that. So make sure, okay, they have that covered. They're probably going to be doing all their conditioning on the field. So cut that out immediately when you get them in the gym. That's, you know, again, it depends on the situation. But for the most part, they're going to be doing lots of conditioning stuff on the field. So you don't need to do that in your gym. Make sure you use that time for strength training. Make sure you're doing exercises that are simple. They're low risk, like talking about single-legged split squats, reverse lunges, a lot of body weight stuff. If they are strong enough, put them under some load, but don't go nuts. Make sure that you're not doing anything like German volume training where you're doing 10 sets of 10 in season, trying to get them stronger, and don't let them do that either. Make sure that you're just focusing on like 2 to 3 sets, 6 to 12 reps at the most. Again, basic exercises, focus on mobility while they're with you, because they're probably not going to do too much of that on the field. They might do like some pregame stretching and stuff like that, but make sure you're focused on mobility, rehab. Again, I don't know how much they are using the stick. I've seen hurling, but when you're talking about that, just make sure you're taking care of their shoulders, to focus on plenty of shoulder and scapular stability stuff. And again, that's John's dealt with this a lot too when he was at Rutgers. You know, it's maintaining the athlete's performance during the season so that they can perform the way that they did week one. You want to make sure they keep that same performance, and if you can squeeze a little bit more out of that, great. But usually, for the most part, you're just going to try to keep them healthy, injury free, and make sure that they, you know, don't come into the gym, you know, healthy and then walk out of the gym limping. Like, that's right. The last thing that the coach is going to blame you for any of that stuff.
Right.
Right. And I think that's a really good point, because I always say it's like you wouldn't know Jordan's name if he had been injured his entire rookie year. He would have been cut and he would have been gone, you know. Now, that's sometimes easier said than done, but I think that the role – the minimal bare role of a strength coach is to make sure that his or her athletes are as injury proof as possible, from the way that we think that we can do that. And I think that the way that I always look to training my own athletes and anyone that I still work with, and I think Kev, you'll probably agree, because I know it's the same kind of concept as boils and crises and stuff. You're training athletes, and there are certain, no matter what the sport is, there's certain qualities that athletes have that, regardless of the sport, they all have that.
The hip toss, like I said, like look at the hip toss. It's something that transitions right into a bunch of different sports. A lot of people are going to have. I mean, look at how many sports you do on one leg, or how many sports you're going to have to internally and externally rotate at your joints. Pretty much all of them.
All of them. Yeah. I mean, there's. I can't think of a single sport that doesn't require great amount of hip strength and core stability. I mean, period. I just can't think of one. You know, even if you look at like Olympic ping pong stuff, those guys are wailing that racket. You know, they're flying all over the place. You need strength and stability there. So exactly what I look at that as a continuum. And this is almost like anyone that's that might be a functional movement screen familiar, which it's pretty much the same concept. I'm looking at the ability to acquire positions and be stable in those positions. So if they can't do that, I have to start there. If they can do that, then I'm looking for strength in that position. Once they're strong, then I'm looking to transition that strength into speed and therefore power within that position and that movement, and then gradually broadening that to maybe encompassing further movements. But basically, you're looking at a very simple kind of approach. You're not really looking at, like, again, like you said, like swinging a weighted baseball bat or something crazy like that. I'm looking at the ability of the athlete to be a good athlete, and their skill sets will then take that athleticism and apply it to the field within their own skills training and practices and gameplay. So, you know, you can get into speed training and you can get into a lot of different types of training within the weight room. But overall, I think that if you're missing any of those components, you're not going to have a good athlete, and you may have someone that's going to be predisposed to certain injuries because they're not able to contain the forces that they're producing. So if you define the athlete as being someone that needs stability in certain situations, they need strength and they need power, which is then strength and speed. They need mobility or agility, so they need to be mobile, but they need to be able to harness the strength and power within that mobility. And that's the type of person that you're looking to train. I think you're trying to make your player that type of individual. No matter what the sport is, that's who you want on your field. You want someone that has a high level of sport-specific skills, but you also want someone that can apply those skills in an explosive way, in a safe way, and in an efficient way. So I think that it becomes a little less about the sport-specific movement, because you can make a ton of arguments about how specific is anything. How specific is a squat to any real athletic motion? You know, how much is that carryover? So what we're really hoping that we're doing is we're hoping that we're making strong, powerful, fast athletes that will be able to express themselves on the field in the best way for their position. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't that you're going to train, you know, in football like a wide out the same as a lineman, but they're going to be basics that are going to be overlapping no matter what. They're all probably going to have some kind of squatting or deadlifting motion regardless, and they may have the same basic template before it starts to go out into different directions, but overall you're still making, again, good, strong, powerful athletes. I think that the sport specific stuff then gets into more of the prehab, so to speak. So if I'm looking at a specific positional player, I want to identify the asymmetries of their motion in their game. You know, what are they doing and what are they emphasizing, and then try to control for that also. So if there's a lot of motion in one direction, I want to make sure that the mobility is as equal as I can get it in both directions. And I want to make sure that things that are supposed to be stable to allow the expression of force are stable. And usually that's the core that we're talking about. So that can kind of blend itself into the sport specific motions and making sure that whatever it is that you need that athlete to be able to do efficiently is also done safely. You know, you don't want excess motion necessarily coming from the lumbar. You don't want excess motion at the shoulder and without stability of the core and things like that. So that can be part of your sport-specific and rehab strategies. But everything else, I think, is not so much about what the athlete looks like when they're on the field, but rather what their needs are on the field. So if they need to run quickly and they need to cut and they need to move in different directions, and you're looking at core stability and you're looking at hip strength and power and the ability of the lower extremity blending into the core to stabilize on these very strong, quick cuts and movements so that you're not falling into patterns of injury like at the knee and at the back and things like that.
Good mention on the asymmetry stuff. Yeah. All right. I think that's where we're going to wrap it up.
That's what she said.
Let me look at this real quick. Katie, I will say for the one-handed stuff that we've hit on that in the past on previous episodes, if you just search for it in the iTunes thing, you should be able to pick that up. And what we'll pretty much say for the most part is you can still do a lot of stuff holding on to a dumbbell on one side. And you can also use weight vests if you have those available. But for a quick example, I have an athlete that messed up his...
Hold on a second. Let's just give the audience some background. She hurt her hand. She can't use her right hand.
Okay. So so I have an athlete who broke his collarbone in a hockey game. So simply, you know, adapted a lot of the stuff so it could use, you can, he would only use his left arm. So he'd just hold dumbbells on his left arm when he did rear foot elevated split squats or single legged deadlifts. You know, is that going to cause a huge asymmetry? No, it's not. Calm down. It's going to be okay. I mean, it, especially when you're talking about a couple weeks or maybe even a, you know, a couple weeks, but you can still do a lot of bilateral stuff. You can even do a lot of body weight stuff, and you can even do some like rowing and pressing with that one arm and not be afraid of developing crazy asymmetries that are going to throw you out of whack, and you're not going to have one arm that's way bigger than the other. It's not going to happen.
There's actually a phenomenon called overflow that neurally that sort of protects against that. You're not going to, like you said, you're not going
to
get
to a certain extent.
I work out right. I'm not going to work out my left arm and my right arm will be sore, but neurally your body will, for whatever reason, we don't quite understand it, but it's an amazing phenomenon that if I use my, my left arm, we see increased neural activity in the right arm. So we use that in rehab too, but certainly when you're trying to train around an injury, you can still train the opposite side. And when that injury is healed, you can return to that and you won't be quite as weak as you would have been otherwise. The other thing I want to throw in, though, is I've seen some very cool things with bands where they'll wrap bands around their shoulders and like squat that way or stuff like that. So you can try some, you know, I think the vest is a very good idea. Unilateral leg training is a great idea. I mean, you just take the advantage of the fact that you're going to have limited loading no matter what, and try to use that to your advantage to look at some things that you may have been blowing past, you know, just like what we were talking before about, you know, doing too much with strength work and kind of blowing past either an injury that's been growing or lack of stability somewhere. So use this to this time to your advantage. But yeah, you can wrap a band like the stretch bands. You can really just literally put it around your shoulders and then step on the thing and you'll have resistance for squats and things like that. So there's some really creative ways to use the bands. That's another option.
All right, cool. Like I said, we've hit it on it before a couple times, so you can head back. I know Lee was on, talked about it a little bit too with one of her clients. So yep, that's it. We're going to wrap it up now. Thanks as always for listening, and don't leave. Don't forget, we're going to be talking about the Meeting the Minds of the Perform Better Summit. And continuing to look for the podcast, I will try to say that once I get back from Japan, once we're back from the Thanksgiving break, I will try to be a little bit more regular. Everyone is a little bit more situated and settled down, so we will do our best. Hopefully this will satiate your appetite. There's about a 30-minute off-topic discussion, like I said, on Tokyo and John's trips and I think that's it.
If you're not on my Facebook, if you're not on my Facebook or Kevin's, Kevin will have pictures of Tokyo. I've got pictures of all my trips, so you want to check those things out.
Absolutely. Again, thanks for listening. Check us out on iTunes. You can subscribe through there. You can check us out at thefitcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinLarrabee or facebook.com/KevinLarrabee. John doesn't use any of that stuff. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. One little more mini segment is about the Meeting of the Minds out in Phoenix, Arizona. I went out there with Mike Boyle a couple weeks ago. Yes, that's true. We roll together. And basically, it was a 3-day seminar put on by Perform Better, talking about the future of the individual's kind of like niche.
Niche.
So we kind of arrived a little bit late. We showed up fashionably late on Friday morning, coming in from Boston. And first off, got to see Martin Rooney, and he was awesome. Martin is like
a fun speaker.
He's not only a fun speaker. He's one of the best dudes in the industry. He's one of the best people, like real, true guys that I've met in this field. That is just a great person overall. And I'm hoping, like I said in the past, we're hoping to have him on like really often, because I think he brings a lot to the table. He's multifaceted when it comes to the athletes that he trains and things that the listeners can adapt for themselves. So he talked a lot about the past and, you know, he kind of went all over the place, but talking about being about passion, about strength and conditioning. And like I said, just read as much of his stuff as you can. Check it out. Next up was John Berardi, who we haven't talked to on the podcast in like 3 years. But it was really cool. It's great to see John again. He's actually like the first guy I bumped into when I walked in there, and we caught up quite a bit. He's doing outstanding. Obviously, if you've been checking out, it's always bugged me saying precision nutrition. I always say that incorrectly. Like I always say precision, like I can't pronounce it correctly. But anyways, John was there talking about nutrition and the future of body transformation. He's obviously been doing a lot of stuff about body transformations at precisionnutrition.com. And that was pretty good, right? I took a big sip of water before that. Smacked my lips together to make sure I could pronounce it correctly. He brought up, there's a couple choice quotes that I want to bring up. Are we teaching exercise or changing lives? Like, you know, at some point you got to remember that a lot of these people are coming to you to help, for you to help them change their lives. Like they want to be healthier, they want to be fitter, you know, they want to lose weight, however you want to put it. They're coming to you to change their life in some way. And to think about the thing that I was kind of thinking about is, you know, is it possible to change someone's life in 3 hours a week? Or is that something that, you know, obviously I think it requires a little bit more connection and communication on everyone's part, but I thought that was interesting.
I would think that you could. I think that you can. I think that you need help. I think that you need.
We do it. I'm saying we do it, but can we be more successful at it?
Right.
Not everyone succeeds.
Right. No, not everyone succeeds. I think that that's as much on a given trainer as it can be on a given client, and then also the interaction. Some trainers are great for certain populations or people, but not for others. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? But, you know, I think that ultimately begins with the individual, someone willing to make the hard choices that it takes to change their life. And then it takes a competent trainer and a motivator to be able to facilitate that.
Absolutely. And, kind of running through a couple more things, lead people to success by removing the obstacles in their way. And I thought that was really good. And I'm going to bounce over to a little bit later in the trip where we went to Athletes Performance. Mark Verstegen was super nice. And again, I'm going to drop some names here, folks. So buckle in. But Mark Verstegen drove myself, Mike Boyle, Anna Rachel Cosgrove, and Anna Taku, also works at NBSC, over to Athletes Performance on Saturday morning. And we got to the whole walkthrough of the facility, how he sets it up for his athletes, and like how he removes barriers. Like he didn't necessarily put it that way, but if you've ever been to Athletes Performance, or you know, like AP, that's where all, you know, like all the baseball players go. You know, if they're from the West Coast, they all train at AP. So they, it kind of showed us how they make it really simple. Like they have it set up where the athlete will pretty much spend their whole off season there, like all day. Like we'll sit there, you know, play video games, they'll have all their meals prepared, all their meals, like they will pick a meal, but then they the chef has exactly what the macronutrient breakdown should be of that meal, so it gets the calories and the portions correct to match their goals based on what their nutritionist set them up with. They have shakes and their supplements lined up for when they get in there. It's like the thing that it looked like to me was a mental institution. Like, it sounds like a really weird analogy, but like, they had like the cups lined up with all the athletes' names on it, and it would have like their fish oil, their vitamin D, and their multivitamin all in that cup. So all they would do is take that cup, pop the pills, drink some water, and they're good to go. They had tons of EAS shakes for pre and post workout, Gatorade all over the place for pre and post workout. Like I said, they're removing all those barriers that would, you know, stop them from being the best that they could possibly be. They're helping them with the recovery with their massage therapist. They're even working on some like stuff like they can't really talk about, but they're working on some stuff for complete like well-being of the athlete, not only just like body. But it really blew me away. And that was one of the things, like, I saw John's talk, and then the next day I went and saw AP, and I'm like, that's exactly what Mark's doing here. And I think that's why they have a lot of success. Another analogy, it's not like a super, might not make a ton of sense, but they like athletes kind of get their hand held. Like, they make sure that they are not doing anything that's going to hurt them. They perform at their best. And I think that's why they get such great results there. And I think that's a great way to do it. They figured it out, because I don't know, John, do you know of any like professional athletes that have gotten paid millions of dollars, but then just became overweight and then dropped out of the sport? Do you know John Lackey?
Yeah. I was going to say that CC is getting close, but he's still,
but CC's a beast. He still performs. He's a beast. But I'm talking about some, like, you look at, like Vin Baker, who was obviously an alcoholic. But I mean, he battled with weight and, you know, keeping up with his training. You look at Sean Kemp.
Yeah.
Another guy. Basically, look at any Portland Trailblazer from the late 90s. And except Bonzi Wells. Like, Bonzi Wells got out of there all right, but even he, when he left, didn't look that great. But I think that is, you know, as gifted as you.
Names, man.
Dude, I played a lot of NBA 2K, man. So again, I think it's as motivated as that athlete is by money. Like, they're, you know, you have to help them. You have to like remove the barriers, like John said. So
also, like, what people tend to forget is that athletes are just people too. They just have certain skill sets and whatever. But they, you know, you have the same. It's amazing. Like, some of the, you know, when it comes to training athletes, like, there's just this huge amount of a mental game that you mm-hmm. play as a coach to them. And it's people, you know, I mean, yeah, you get the guys that are completely motivated. They come in and they're ready to do work, but you get guys that just don't want to do anything. And it amazes you that they're, you know, that people playing at high levels, and you got to be like, hey, dude, you got to do this work. You know, like, it's amazing, but they're just, it ultimately ends up that they're still just people just like anyone else. And you've got, you know, clients that are motivated, you know, personal training clients that are motivated, come in and they want to lose weight and they want to whatever. And then you've got people that will show up at the door, but they don't want to do anything afterwards. And athletes sometimes are even worse than that, you know, it's incredible.
The last thing I wanted to hit on from his talk, and there was like a lot more, but I just want to hit some quick bullet points. Motivation and willpower is like a muscle. It can get fatigued. So, you know, you find those people that are always dieting and stuff like that, and they find like they can never stick to a diet because, you know, they find out that their motivation runs out. Or their ability to stay motivated runs out. And, you know, then what do we do when they get to that point? How do we deal with that? So again, I thought that was super interesting. And John's an incredibly bright guy. And I recommend you check out precisionnutrition.com. If you get, see, look at, I could barely do it. I try to speed through it. But if you get a chance to if you get a chance to kind of hear him speak, I mean, he's always got a ton of ideas and that's good stuff. Finishing up that first day was Alan Cosgrove. who easily, like, he's the guy that you need to have, like, towards the end of the day, because towards the end of the day, like, people are starting to get tired, and then he comes in, and you've obviously seen him present, right, John?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, like, he comes in, and he lightens up the whole room, he drops lots of jokes, and then he backs it up with tons of awesome information, and again, Alan is one of those guys, stand-up dude, he's, you know, he's one of those guys that has been super nice to me since day one, like when I think he was on like episode 12 of the podcast. And ever since then, he's been, incredibly helpful in guiding me through my career and stuff like that.
He's a very giving guy. He's like, you can always get his ear.
Oh, I mean, even like a little inside baseball for you guys. But when I was out at MTV, like when I was kind of fluctuating, you know, between just figuring out what I wanted to do for a career, he was kind enough. He invited me up to his gym and took me out for lunch and talked to me. Like that's the kind of guy that he is. You know, he took a couple hours out of his day to help me figure out what I wanted to do. But besides being, you know, on top of the game and brilliant with, the stuff that he does with his clients over at Results Fitness, one of the nicest guys that I've ever known. So anyways, going on with that, I thought one of the cool things that he brought up was that one of the trends that he's seeing at in the last 12 years at Results Fitness has been that people's functional movement screen scores on new clients are declining. He's like literally we're continuing to move less and less and less. And as the years go on, the average score for a new person walking into the gym for the first time is getting worse.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was really interesting. And again, I think it brings up, it's another topic I want to talk about sometime, but functional movement screen is not an assessment. That's gotten into a lot of, interesting discussion on strengthcoach.com, but we'll talk about that next time. But
we could do a whole episode on it. I mean,
I'd love to. That's like I could do that tonight. But we won't. But yeah, maybe we'll do it. Maybe we'll do it before I go. Maybe we'll do it like Tuesday night or something like that.
Cool.
We'll have one in the bag for midweek. Okay. So, anyways, the last thing I wanted to mention about his talk. It was like the trend to move towards, quote, self-limiting exercises. Exercises where improper form is the sign to stop the exercise. Like think inverted rows, think push-ups, think goblet squats, think front squats, things like that where it is a self-limiting exercise where you cannot maintain correct form. That's when you stop. Which I think is interesting. I mean, it's less, you know, if you think about it, really, it's less risk, especially when you talk about pushing a sled. Like when you can't push a sled anymore, your legs stop moving, or vice versa. So that's that. Like I said, talked about AP. That was on day two. Don Chu talked on Saturday morning. I missed his talk because we were at Athletes Performance. I missed like half of it. But his talk was on extreme flexibility, and he went through like a lot of the assessment tests that that you'll see like Thomas test, like hip internal and external rotation, shoulder internal external rotation test. Talking about the relationship between muscle and fascia, like a lot of this stuff that. As I'm not at my 10,000 hours, but you know, like as that, all this stuff starts coming together, you get more and more like, all right, it's all connected. Like, yeah, no, I saw Thomas Myers talk about this a couple months ago. Okay. And I know what Don's talking about. Like I'm on board with you, Don. Like we're 3 years ago. I'm like, I'm friggin' lost. All right.
Right.
He lost me 20 minutes ago. I'm just going to pretend like I'm paying attention because I'm just going to look in the book and, you know, take some notes. But, that's a cool feeling. Like I'm sure John squeezed in his 10,000 hours really quickly with school, but, last thing I talked about before, The last talk that I really saw, I also saw like Todd Durkin. He kind of talked about similar stuff that I've written about in the past, so I'm not going to talk about that. But Mike went up there and yeah, straight up, it was Mike Boyle. And one of the things that was kind of like the, I guess this was the controversial part of the weekend. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you heard about this.
No, tell.
I'm going to pull out my notes real quick. Here, let me pause real quick so I can get this correct. All right, so Mike talked a lot about single leg training. Obviously, that's kind of one of the big things he's been talking about, but his talk was on functional training 2021. You know, I brought up a couple of quick things I wanted to point out about the talk. You know, fat loss, this will always sell. So make sure, like, you are, you know, don't be that guy who's like, oh, I'm only going to train, like, performance athletes. Like, if you want to make money, fat loss. People are still going to want to lose fat. The obesity rate continue to climb at a scaring pace. It's like, don't forget, you know, when you think about it with yourself or with your clients, the ramifications of obesity, the what carrying a second person of body fat around is doing to your body. And he illustrated this point by going up to a woman in the front of the room, goes, how much do you weigh?
Oh,
I don't think he said that. He said, what are you, like 120? Something like that. He's like, can I give you a hug? He picks her up and starts walking around with her, like giving her a bear hug. It's like, all right. Oh, so now this God. Is like, he was showing one of the guys that we have at the gym, Hank. He lost like 150 pounds. He's like, this is what Hank felt like. You know, he's carrying around another person with him all day. So again, it's kind of an interesting thing to think about.
That had to have like, that had to have been nuts.
No, it was funny. And then it's been really interesting. We've been like ripping Mike's old tapes, like VHS tapes, to digital. And he shows a video from that he shot in 1993 of him doing hurdle jumps. And he goes, what do you notice? And then for Sagan's in the back room, he goes, you had hair. It was funny. I guess he had to be there, but it was pretty funny. The crowd laughed. And he also showed, like, if you've seen Mike talk in the last year or two, you've seen he showed a magazine, Strength Magazine, from 1922, showing a single-legged squat. And that's the exercise that they're showing. And then at the bottom of the page, it shows a bilateral squat or, you know, a regular bodyweight squat. And it says a variation of the exercise shown above. So even back then, he's like, you know, they even knew like single leg training was better back then and more effective. And that was like what we started with. We started with single leg training and then we added in the back squat, like when all the bodybuilding stuff came in. So that was that. And I've had 3 or 4 people email me about what happened because I guess this kind of got out on strengthcoach.com. But the, you know, at the end, you can kind of have people come up and talk and ask the presenters questions. And did you know Mike Stone, Doc?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mike's been in the industry for like forever.
Like a million years.
A million years.
Wasn't he one of the first guys that he started the NSCA?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And if you know history with Mike, he's not super best friends with the NSCA right now. Doc came up to the microphone and basically with like a list of stuff, like he wrote down, I think like 8 or 9 things on this list, said, you know, Mike, I disagree with you on a bunch of things. Mike goes, all right, let's talk about it. That's what we're here to do. Let's talk about it a little bit. So, basically he ran down this list. And Mike's like, no, I agree with you. I completely agree with you in a lot of the sense. Like he talked about how our doc talked about how he still found, bilateral training to be very effective for building strength. And Mike goes, I'm not saying that it doesn't. I'm saying that we found with, especially with the population that we work with, hockey players, you know, single leg training has been, more effective and less, has less potential for injury. There's less risk involved with it. And you know, another thing Doc brought up is like, and Doc's like, we knew about bilateral deficit for a long time. And Mike's like, I agree, I said that. Like, I think there was just like a lot of miscommunication there, and they really agreed on most of the topics. Like, they were disagreeing about very little. But I think Doc was kind of just like selectively hearing, you know, what he wanted to hear. Or maybe he just kind of like, you know, wasn't on the same page. He thought Mike was disagreeing with him when they necessarily weren't. But that's really all that it was. It wasn't really a big deal. It wasn't controversial. I think, you know, it's great that these guys have both been in the industry for so long and they can have these discussions. And, you know, as long as it's kept civil, it's perfectly fine.
But well, I think the only place that really gets uncivil is the internet.
Oh yeah, I mean,
usually
that's...
people are able to have civil discussions, and I think the fact of the matter is too that you know exactly. I mean, my understanding of what the meeting of the minds was supposed to be was supposed to be the idea of like, look at how much everyone agrees on. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and from very different places, but they all tend to agree on a lot of the same concepts, and the differences tend to be minutia.
Well, it's good to disagree, and if we never disagreed, then we would never have progress. We would never have, right. You know, we would be doing the same crap that we were doing 100 years ago. You know what they say, the people that are crazy enough to think that they can change the world generally do. Steve Jobs. Right. All right, anyways. All right, well, hope you guys enjoyed that. John, maybe you'll get off your ass and actually go to a seminar and learn something sometime. But until then.
Yeah. I'll look up my local Saudi seminars and see how that's going.
PerformBidder's not coming to Saudi Arabia this month? I thought that was this month.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I actually do look up seminars every time I'm home, though. They're never freaking around.
Well, we're doing a FitCast seminar next year.
Sweet.
We've talked about this.
Yeah, it's true. We have.
I have a facility where we can do it. Yeah, why not? We can get 100 people. You can present. Lee will present. I'll present on maximum Super Nintendo gaming.
Awesome. That'll be the blowout seminar course of the week.
No, that's actually the hands-on. We're gonna be bringing up. We're gonna bring some Tetris Attack and Super Street Fighter 2.
Game Boys. Everyone leaves with a Game Boy.
Look under your seat.
Thanks, Oprah.
Everybody's getting a Game Boy. And you're getting a Game Boy. And you're getting a Game Boy. And you're getting a Game Boy. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed that bonus. Discussion for this episode, I think it's 227, although I feel like we recorded 227.
Well, we recorded something and then you didn't.
Yeah, we never put it out. I don't know. It's probably not. I've switched computers in between that, I think, so I don't think I even have that. But
Kevin, you didn't put out.
Didn't put it out. Nope.
No.
So we have a star-studded show lined up for you today. Lee and John and myself are going to be here. Let's get talking about some off-topic stuff because we haven't done a show in like another 5 weeks, 4 weeks.
At least.
Well, you can talk first, John, because you've been traveling the most. Why don't you recount what you've been doing?
My goodness. Thank you, Kevin. That's very sweet of you.
I wish, unfortunately, Rockapella is not here to sing the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego song. I'll see if I can put it in the show, though.
That'd be cool.
Rockapella.
Yeah, we went on our trip. We Hajj is one of the major holidays in Islam, so we do a trip every year. So this year we hit Africa. Basically, it was kind of like a combined like pleasure trip, but also there was a lot of business going on. So we started in the Maldives, and then we had a few stops in Africa, and then stayed in Ghana for the opening of the Mövenpick Hotel, which His Highness co-owns. And then we headed off to Morocco to open the Four Seasons in Marrakesh, because His Highness co-owns the Four Seasons hotel brand also. And then we, on the way back, had another stop in Nigeria, and then finally made it back to Saudi Arabia. So it was pretty packed trip. I met three presidents and a vice president and a couple diplomats and a couple, like, just craziness. So it was a pretty cool trip. It's a blessing to be able to, like, see all these different places, especially places in Africa where you just, I think as Americans, that's like an amazing place to go. You know, we don't always get to do something like that. So I think it was very cool experiences. And I met Good Luck Jonathan. That's the president of Nigeria. So the jokes were flying that Jonathan met Good Luck Jonathan, and then they were calling me Bad Luck Jonathan, all that kind of stuff. So fun and games.
Sound a little sick.
I am a little, I'm not sick. What it is that every time I get back from a trip, my allergies go in like full blast. So it's like, it's just known. I just know I'm going to get,
alert.
Yeah, my ass kicked once I get back. So sadly, it is the same.
Cool.
Yep. A lot of dust in the desert. Who would have figured?
Yeah, dude, you got to get that Uncharted 3.
Is it good? You started playing it?
Yeah, I beat it. And then the day after that, I got Modern Warfare 3. I think I started playing it at 7 o'clock at night. I beat it at like 1:30 in the morning. Just like sat there in two sitting.
That's hardcore, man.
No, it's a super short game. It's really not long.
Is it? I've been playing. I've got Batman coming. I've got
that was really good.
I've
done a great job playing video games in the last like month. I've been really good at it.
That's why we haven't been recording, hasn't it?
I mean, it might be part of the reason.
Batman, I've got when I get back home to bring back with
Skyrim.
Me. What's up?
Skyrim.
What's that?
The Elder Scrolls. It's the new Oblivion.
Yeah, no, I already have that. I haven't played it yet.
No, it just came out like 2 days ago.
Oh, the one that you told me to get, I have.
It came out on Friday.
Oh, yeah? No, I don't have that. I got the one that you told me.
You'll like this. You're into the orcs and crap, so.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I don't like first-person stuff.
Well, you don't have to play it in first-person.
All right, that's a win.
And you got magic and stuff like that, and you can throw fireballs out of your hands.
I love that. And then I got, I got Assassin's Creed, the last one.
Yeah, new one comes out on Tuesday.
Yep.
You gotta get going on that.
Yep, I got that on order. And then I think it was like one more thing I was going to get. Oh, yeah, and then the whatever the hell you just said. You were
all right,
playing.
Well, let's sideline this a little bit. Although I did just learn how to play as Dhalsim through Street Fighter 2 Turbo today on Super Nintendo, which I never used him ever.
It's exciting.
Dude, it's Yoga Fire, man. Yoga Fire and Yoga Flame. You got to know when it's the right time to use each of those. And it's the only real guy that's hard to fight against with him is Guile, because with his flash kicks, you really just have to like sit back and spam the Yoga Fire. But anyways, I'm going to Japan in 3 days.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Are you excited? Are you hyped?
Tokyo, man.
Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo. I am really excited. I'm super, I'm like over preparing as much as I can right now because this might be like my one shot. And I'm over preparing in some ways and really under preparing in others where, I made sure I have, proper attire. It's going to be like high 50s while I'm there. So it's not going to be super cold. It's just going to be like, jeans and sweatshirt weather, no winter stuff. But I've looked through a couple books, but my plan right now, like this is literally my plan. I arrive there at around, I'm probably going to land at 4:45-ish. Okay. It's about a PM, and it's about a 2 hour drive to the hotel from the airport. I'm getting picked up by the hotel. It's part of my Delta Vacations package, which is nice. I paid a little bit extra, but it means I won't have to like figure out how to take the commuter rail or take the hotel bus, which can take like almost 3 hours to get to where I'm going. So someone's, you know, chauffeur is going to pick me up. Sounds more fancy than it is. So hopefully I will get to the hotel around, maybe if I'm lucky, like if I'm lucky by 8 PM, Tokyo time, which will be 8 AM Eastern Standard Time. So at that point I probably would have been up about, 26 hours.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Melatonin for the win, buddy.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, do I sleep the whole plane ride? Because once I get there, it's going to be like 8 o'clock and I'm supposed to be going to bed again.
My experience is you try to sleep on the plane because you're not going to get a full night's sleep on the plane. So trying to stay up that whole time is going to be killer.
So, I plan if I want to sleep, like if I feel like I'm going to sleep, I'm not going to fight it. And I'm very lucky the flight going to Tokyo from New York is pretty open. It's only like half full. Okay. So it looks like at this point I'm not going to have anyone. Yeah. I have an aisle seat and no one's going to be in the middle. And there's someone in the window. But I mean, I'm doing my best to prepare. I got some audiobooks on my iPod. I got some games on my iPod. I'm going to bring a couple of books with me to do a little bit more research, look at the train layout a little bit.
Get yourself a neck pillow.
You got one, yeah.
Get yourself like the eye cover thingy mask.
That's worth getting?
Yeah, okay. For sure.
Grab one of those right now.
And then get yourself some kind of like earplugs or just keep your headphones in. It's really hard to – I mean, some people are able to fall asleep pretty easily on a plane. Personally, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
So however you travel, you'll know. But if – you know, that stuff helps for sure.
All right, cool. Yeah, I guess I don't want an eye patch. I'm searching on Amazon. I don't want an eye patch. I don't want a silly face sleeping novelty eye cover. Actually, maybe I do want that. Actually, I think I will buy that. It's got little cartoon like eyes and glasses on it. I think that'd be Oh, they're for kids.
Oh,
I can be a little panda bear. Oh, they don't have Prime shipping. It won't get here in time. But yeah, so the plan is right now, you know, get there. You know, if I get there around 8, depending on energy levels, I might go walk around the streets like for an hour or two. Not leave very far from the hotel. But day one, it's, you know, getting up, it's, going to Akihabara, going to Electric Town, now figuring out how to get there because I know how to get to the train station. It's pretty easier. The rail station from my hotel. But from there, I don't know. I really don't have a good idea of how to get anywhere. I'm just figuring I will get there and then figure it out. I get a week. Yeah. I have a week. You know, I'm not going to I don't have 2 days there. I have a long time to figure it out.
Right. Well, I mean, you can do as much homework as you can beforehand. But
well, I have. I've gone to, you know, a great thing is Google Maps. I've gone to Street View and literally walked from my hotel to the rail station through Google Street View. Yeah, it's wicked cool. And like looking like, oh, man, I'm going to stop there. Like this is 7-Eleven like right next to my hotel where if I need to, I can – they have – ATMs that accept American bank cards there, and they do currency exchange.
Always use concierge can help a lot.
I've contacted the hotel and they speak English at the front desk. Like they,
well, I freaking hope so.
A fluent English. So they said, oh yeah, when we get here, we'll draw you a map and we'll show you how to know the railway. They're like, I'm like, thank you. This is why I went through Delta and made sure I got like a Western style hotel, opposed from some people like, oh, you got to get in like an Eastern hotel and, you know, something that has like a tatami mat and, you know, a bed that's like just like a thing on the floor. It's so much cheaper. I'm like, no, dog, I'm going solo. Like I'm not going to leave too much room for error. So hopefully I can, figure this stuff out as I go. But I got some cool tools, man. I got a Kodak, like a flip camera that does 1080p. I decided to go against bringing my nice Panasonic HD camcorder because I don't want to be that guy that's like walking around with a camcorder. One, I think it's creepy.
No, but I personally, like, well, you've seen the pictures that I take when we're on trips.
I'm bringing a good camera. I'm bringing a good photo camera, but this is like a 1080p camcorder.
Well, if you think that there's a chance that you might record, I'd say bring it. It's better to bring it and not use it than to not bring it and wish you had it.
Well, this small camera I have, which is like a flip camera, it shoots great video as long as there's light. If it's low light, it looks like crap. But I'm not going to be doing a lot of stuff with low light.
Right. I think you'd be fine.
I got a little mini hand tripod that looks like a grip that you would have for.
Okay.
The closest thing I can think of is like Apollo 13. You know, the thing that like the joystick uses to land the shuttle.
Yeah.
It looks like that. It just screws into the bottom of the camera.
Have you ever taken any classes or read anything on like photography?
Nope, but I have my mom's Canon camera, which has an auto feature on it.
Do yourself a favor or talk to me later. Like, I'm learning how to take better pictures, but I also have an entire camera crew that comes with us on vacation, so I like get to literally sit down and learn with them. You know, they teach me stuff. But seriously, it makes such a huge difference in the quality of your vacation photos if you just know how to the basics of setting up a camera shot, a picture shot, and like understanding like how to compose a scene. It'll make like all the difference in the world.
Maybe I hear where you're coming from, but maybe I just want to take pictures for me to like look at and for like weird stuff.
Oh, for sure. But what I'm saying is it's like it's not difficult at all. Like, I'm not talking like you have to be some kind of like sitting there with.
I've actually listened to some photography podcasts.
Okay.
On the Twit has a like this week in photography thing that I've caught a couple times to.
Okay.
And they talk about that, like setting up the shot in the foreground and stuff like that. And
like the rule. I mean, honestly, just understanding the rule of threes makes all the difference in the world. Like from just taking a random picture to that is a huge difference. Just that alone.
Well, yeah, no, I'll definitely. I hope to be posting pictures throughout the week, like when I'm up at 2 a.m. and I can't. Actually, one of the reasons I'm going to Akihabara the first day is so I can pick up like a Super Nintendo and bring it back to the room. So if I am up in the middle of the night, I'm not just like sitting watching Japanese television.
Dude, there's some funny Japanese television.
I'm sure I'm going to be taking some video of that too. I want to document as much as I can without like being, of course, yeah. Guys like got a camera. It's like I feel like the Japanese are kind of, they are private people, and I don't want to be like the white dude who's just like walking through the street, like filming everyone. Like who's just trying to get to work.
Yeah. No, I think I think everyone, like for me personally, like when we go away, like I love taking pictures because I love to share the experience with people because I know I'm going to places that, you know, the overwhelming majority of like my friends or whoever probably won't get to see. So I try to take as many pictures as possible, but for sure you want to be like respectful. You know, like if you notice pictures, like a lot of my pictures.
Pictures are one thing. I'm talking about like video, like a video, like a, you know, taking videos.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I mean, same thing. Like I don't tend to take a lot of pictures of like the people because I kind of feel like that's an invasion of their privacy. But
maybe I will bring the good camcorder.
Exactly.
Why not? It doesn't take up that much room. It's like twice the size of the flip camera. I just don't want to bring like a $500 camcorder when I can bring a $70 one that's going to kind of get the job done. But anyways, the along with all that stuff, I like I said, I literally just plan on stepping outside of the hotel the first morning, or you know, the first day. Probably I won't leave the hotel until like 9:30 or 10 because it gets kind of nuts on the rail station until everyone gets to work. But I literally just plan on stepping out and figuring it out from there. Like just walking around and I'm sure I can just look at stuff and be amazed for 7 days. And
yeah, kind of. It does help to have a basic framework, but
well, if I can find the rail station, that gets me everywhere.
Right.
I mean, as long as I know how to get to the rail station, I can get to anywhere I want to go. You know, I picked out two restaurants that I want to check out, but for the most part, I want to be looking at street vendors and stuff like that. And I mentioned before, I probably won't eat a ton of food while I'm there if I'm not a huge sushi guy. And I think I would be more interested in like the weird stuff that they have at a 7-Eleven, or in like the vending machines, like seeing like that's just interesting to me, like how they have such pristine vending machines and there's no vandalism there.
Blew my mind when I was in Spain the first time when I was like 22 and there was beer vending machines.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna pick up some Boss coffee drink, which is you know, spearheaded by the one and only Tommy Lee Jones. He's the face of Boss coffee drink.
Well, then that's reason enough for me.
So yeah, I mean, this is I'm just realizing now that I'm gonna be like on a plane from like what would be 10 a.m. to about 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Yep. Welcome to hell, pal.
I don't know how people do it, like people who go to Asia for business. It's
yeah,
it's nuts.
The longest flight we had was from went from Boston to Bora Bora and then from Bora Bora to Vietnam. That was a long, too long ass
sounds
flights.
Like it.
They were long flights.
Really sounds like it. But and actually I've gotten a lot of help for ideas on what to do in Japan from video game forum NeoGAF.
That's which, cool. Yeah, I mean I think as long as you go with a basic framework of an idea, like some people are gonna have like every minute in detail of their day planned out, and other people want to be a little bit more, you know, casual with it. And you tend to be more of the casual kind of guy.
Actually, I'm not. People that have gone on vacation with me, I'm always the one who's like, let's go, come on, let's stop sitting around, let's go. But this time I'm trying to be a little different.
Right, but what I would say is, does that mean in terms of like going and having every minute planned, or just saying let's go do something? I'm just not sure what.
Yeah, it's probably just right. go do something. And like I said, you know, I just want to be immersed in the culture as much as I can, because it's again, it's close to an opposite as we have here in America.
My experience from that, like from coming home, because when I come home, those are my vacations. And for me, my experience, the first time that I had ever come home for a vacation home, I like had my days absolutely packed, like morning, you know, afternoon and evening planned, seeing different people, doing different things. And it was it was a ton of fun, but I didn't feel very rested. So the next time I came home, I said, you know what, I'm going to basically play it by ear. I'm going to make like one or two plans, but I'm basically just going to hang out and just see what happens. And that was a disaster, because what ended up happening was that since nothing was really like set, everything was like falling apart, plans, you know, all kinds of stuff. So for me personally, I think that having a decent scheme of what you're going to do and like, okay, well, so we'll, you know, I'm going to have breakfast and maybe I'll do that in the hotel, or maybe I'll check out that restaurant. You know, give yourself like plan A, plan B kind of stuff.
Well, that's why I found a couple, like going through the farmer's guide, going through and finding a couple places that, you know, I think this has food that suits me. It's within walking distance of my hotel.
Right.
And, you know, I've made sure I have, you know, backup plans where, you know, worst case scenario, you know, I have a pocketbook or a pocket, you know, handbook with a bunch of Japanese phrases on it. Like, how do I get to the train? Like, where's the rail station? Right. You know, can I have some help? Like, and all that stuff. So I've made sure I've covered my bases and made sure that I won't die.
Good, man. Yeah, it sounds good. I mean, like you said, you have to make this trip and any trip your own. You have to do what you enjoy doing. So, you know, if you want to hang around in a 7-Eleven all day and be like, this stuff is fascinating, go for it, man. I mean, my parents do crazy stuff like that too. Like when they go on vacations, they like to go to supermarkets. Like not for the whole day. They'll just pass the supermarket and they'll stop in for, you know, 10, 15 minutes and just look around at the kinds of foods that they sell there. Mm-hmm. So my dad's a chef, so he finds it interesting. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what they do. They like that. You know, I've always liked going to college campuses. Whenever I'm on vacation, if there's a college campus around, like, I'd love to go and see it. It's cool to me to, like, see how, you know, other students, you know, live and study. And I don't know. It's just something I've always enjoyed. So you just have to do whatever you want to do and make sure that you're getting the most out of that approach, you know what I mean?
No, I hear you. And
like, I'm excited for you. I think it'll be cool.
Yeah, it's much needed. I haven't taken a vacation in years, and again, it's kind of like a cleansing. It should be a cleansing experience to go out there and kind of see what the world is like and outside of my Massachusetts house.
We don't, as Americans, we just don't travel enough. Like, there's like, you know, 10-20% of us that go all over the world, mm-hmm. and then the rest of us don't. And you know, you could blame geography, you could blame the fact that the U.S. is so big and there's so much to see within the states that a lot of us, you know, it's less expensive to do things like that or whatever. But you know, if you look at you know, Europeans and really anyone within like the Europe and Asian continents, like they're always traveling. They're always moving about. They speak multiple languages and they go different places. And I think that through my experience, like, it is eye opening, and you do get to see so many different things and see how other people live and see how other people view life and approach life. And it's really a rewarding.
Well, that's the cool thing though. It's observing. It's
right.
You know, just like I fully plan on finding some place to sit near the rail station, just kind of sit there, like, not and like, just, you know, watch,
right?
You know, just watch everything else go by, and you know, quote that line from Tokyo Drift. So
no, it's very cool. So you should have a good time.
I will, like I said, I will have tons of video, and you've convinced me to bring my camcorder, my $400 Panasonic camcorder, which
I do what I can. Look, man, I travel with two cameras, and I'm about to buy a third and carry that around too, because it's just like, you just never know what the situation is. Like, I have a camera that I can drop. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a camera that's like, you know, fit in my pocket, and I'm about to get, you know, like an interchangeable lens so I can really start taking some nicer pictures, you know, and it's like, and I'm going to keep all of them because you just never know the scenario where it's like, you know, for me especially, it's like, you know, we might do one thing where I can bring one camera. We might do another thing where I should bring another. And it's just like, the worst thing in the world is to not have what you need. If you bring it and you never needed it, you're like, all right, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's, like I said, if people want to check this stuff out, I will try to, I don't know how much internet access I'm going to have. It should be pretty rock solid at the Hyatt, but the, and I'm not saying for people who have actually, I posted this a while back. I'm not staying at the Park Hyatt. That's like $800 a night.
That's the next hotel.
I'm staying at the Hyatt Regency, which is in, Shinjuku, which is a little bit, it's more like $200 a night.
It's not bad.
No, it's not bad. And, you know, like I said, it's got all the, everything that I need. It's got people that speak English there if I need help. And it's, you know, a 5-minute walk from the rail station. There's nothing else I could really ask for.
That's cool.
All right. So, I think that is it. Also, I will post updates on Twitter and Facebook, and, my YouTube channel, my personal one, is just youtube.com/LARRABEE213. But like I said, I'll post links for all that stuff on Facebook and Twitter if you want to watch my adventures. But I want to take like a dozen hours of video, like hopefully like 12 to 15 hours of video, and you know, a couple hundred pictures.
I have some video actually from a few of the trips. I need to upload it to YouTube.
You should just make it private.
Yeah, I should.
Other important news, there's a new Jason Statham movie trailer called Safe that just came out. It's basically the same character that he plays in every movie, but he's protecting a little girl that people are going after. It's literally, what's that Bruce Willis movie where he's helping out that autistic kid? Raising Phoenix or something like that?
Oh.
Rising Phoenix?
I don't know. I vaguely know what you're talking about.
Like he's like autistic and can like crack codes. This is the same movie, but it's got Jason Statham, which is way better.
Right. Yes.
Way better. I don't know. I just saw a picture from Bruce Willis in his new. He's in a new time travel movie, and he looks like crap. He's not looking that great. He's at those curves on the side of his lips, his cheeks. Not looking Statham. Great. No, Willis.
Oh.
But he's also almost, what is he, 56? And Star Trek Enterprise, I've been watching on Netflix streaming. Man, is that show shit.
Is it really?
Like, I try to get into it, but it's so bad.
That's sad. Yeah, it seems like it from what I could see, like, I was at the end of grad school, or I don't know what I was doing, but I could never like sit there and watch it. But it seemed to suffer from the same problem that like a lot of these kind of shows have, where the prequel is more advanced than the sequel. Like Star Wars was like that. You know what I mean? Like,
well, the Caprica had kind of the same problem, but it's not necessarily that. It's because you know where they're going, and you know when they introduce stuff. Like the only way they can kind of show you what you want to see is through time travel, and they use time travel like maybe 6 episodes per season. Like that was the whole over the big arc of the series was a civil time war that was going on between two factions, and Archer, which is like the captain of the Enterprise, kept like being a big part of it, which makes no sense. Because to be honest, if anyone watched Star Trek Voyager, you know that the time ship that helped out in that was in one of the episodes of Voyager said that Janeway was the biggest the captain that made the biggest like problems through like time. So that made sense. All right, that's it for the off topic. That is roughly 30 minutes. Hope you enjoyed it.
That was great content sandwiched by crap.